Hi folks, and thanks for listening to this Tortoise Shack podcast. A little bit of housekeeping before we kick off. You know what I'm about to say, and you're going to click for 30 seconds, but please hear me out. The Tortoise Shack relies entirely on you. No ads, no sponsors, there's no corporate sugar daddy, there's nobody telling us what to do, what we can or cannot say. And you better believe it, if you're listening to The Fresh Batch, you know no one is telling Sparky or Dean what they can or cannot say. But just because our podcast goes out for free doesn't mean it has no value. If you like what the guys do, if you like what the Tortoise Shack does, if you enjoy Echo Chamber Reboot, if you enjoy Musecult, if you enjoy Palcast, all of them are available right now and completely plea-free in one consolidated feed for the price of a fancy cup of coffee once a month. Patreon.com/Tortoise Shack. Please join us. Please help us keep these mics on and these conversations going. I'm shutting up now. Enjoy the show.
It's like Billy Connolly saying, who starts off the chant in the football ground?
Yeah.
Who's
my brother Desi does. Desi is fucking incredible. He's in Anfield, right? And we're all mad Liverpool fans.
Yeah, that's right. I remember he was being.
It stops, right? So he starts off on his own. Come on, you Reds. Or he'll sing, oh, when the Reds. And no one's saying that. And he's on his own, this voice. Then one catches on, right? I've sat there. It was a beautiful experience. I'm a bit embarrassed. Like, no one's catching on. He's going, come on. Oh, when the Reds. 3, 4, right. And you could feel it rippling around.
Oh, man, that's savage.
Oh, when the Reds go marching in. It's fucking great. I think you started that. Yeah,
so, right, so the deadly thing is, right, you're slightly bit embarrassed, right?
Yeah.
Because you know when you stand up in mass and nobody else stands up and down, right? And, but then it starts to ripple and you get a little bit of, oh, that's my brother. He's out.
Yeah, then I'm I want to disown him. Then I'm kind of going, he's with me.
That's my brother.
He's one courageous dude, I have to tell you. He got fucked out of Anfield because he's like, yeah, fucking shit. I go, ref, yeah, come. Yeah, pox. And this kid's there and the security come over him and says, one more out of you and I'm marching you out me. And he's like, and he's the most inoffensive guy you could meet.
Crossbow football does that, doesn't it?
Loses his shit.
What's that one that I don't understand? You know, there's the little outfit at the match and he's going, you're crap. You're almost, you've no fans. Did you ever see that one? He's shouting at the opposing team, you're crap. You've now fans, and he's saying, but he's a little out, a little skinny out or a point.
Yeah. And for some reason in my mind, he's got a club foot. He's a bit like
that, right? So there you go. You have the fella, right? And he turns around, and your man who has the camera, who has the phone, goes, what are you fucking saying? Like, you know, what are you saying? And he goes, you want some?
You fucking want some?
But he's famous now. He's on ads and all. He's not going, you're crap. You've now fans. He's on everything now. He is. Remind me when we go up.
You text me to remind you to remind
the
me.
The best one is, the fella takes my phone and I'll send you my number.
He was a traveller, was he?
No, he wasn't. He was from Galway.
I heard traveller in there. Did you hear
that? I heard traveller.
I got mixed up recently with a person who was a cunt. A cunt. And a cunt, a culty cunt. That's what he said.
A culty cunt.
No, but a country person, like, you know, I know
traveler,
but he was a person from the country, but he sounded exactly like a traveler, and he had all the, and I was telling me mate,
so he was a real country person who was a country person,
he was a country person, but he was from the country. He wasn't a traveler. And the thing was, I was talking to the travelers, I'm in college of travelers, and I was telling one of them, and she was like, that happened to me before. She said, I was talking to somebody and I said to him, are you a traveler? And he was just so offended, you know, right. She's like, but I'm a traveller. And then it all got messy, you know what I mean?
Well, here's an interesting one. You know the cant, like, you know Pavi, the term Pavi, of course, and buffer.
Yeah.
I only learned recently. My friend, traveller woman, therapist Louise McDonough, says to me, Jimmy, buffer's not a good term for it.
A country person, yeah.
I said, I've been around travellers all my life. The cunts are taking the piss, calling me a buffer.
Buffer, that's right.
I thought it was a good thing.
I think years ago, it was a kind of a jiving thing. They were just jiving. Now, here's the buffer now. Like, now, I think it's kind of grown into a bit of a, it's not a nice thing to be saying about a person. Pavi is not a traveller word. That came out of World War One. It was a kind of an English word. After World War One, and loads of men were left jobless, they would have went around, they would have tinkered around the place, like, you know what I mean? They would have travelled around selling pegs and sent, you know, doing odd jobs, and they were called pavies.
Right.
So it's a kind of an English word, but then travellers started to travel in England and they just got hatched onto that name, pavy. So they used the word pavy in cant, but it's not necessarily a traveller word.
So I don't know if you know a friend of mine, Patrick Nevin, he refers to himself as a tinker.
That's right. Loads of travellers do,
I mean, Gary,
yeah.
And other people, when he says it, they mistakenly think it's an offensive thing, but it's not at all.
No, no, because there are thinkers. There was thinkers. Well, there's only one or two left now, but there was thinkers in the traveller tradition. A lot of travellers would have been potato pickers and stuff like that. Like, you know what I mean? That would have been their job. And then there was fair people. So the pecker done, or rickety ding, dinkety ding. Do you like that one? Was that in Sheehan? There was an outlet down in Ringsend, Rhee, and at the end of the night, they'd say to him, come on, Paddy, give us an old tune on the banjo. And he'd no banjo, Rhee. And he would just go, and it's, do you know what it's called? It's called lilting. In the country years ago, when there was no instruments, there was a shortage of instruments, they would have invited lilters from the next town. But they wouldn't know all the tunes. It wasn't that they were just making it up as they were going on going faddle dee. They would actually, they would lilt a tune and people would learn the tune from the lilter, you know? Right, Jimmy, you have to do the lyrics, right?
Go on.
Get on.
Get on.
Fresh.
Go on's a new one. Fresh. Welcome to the Fresh Batch. It's me here, Jimmy George.
Yeah. Fuck off, will you? Fresh, yeah?
Shut the fuck up!
Jimmy, where were you born?
I was actually born in the south of England, on the coast, Southampton, in a grotty little council estate, flats complex. I was actually born in the flat. Now, it was a planned birth, but the midwife, this was 61, right? The midwife was meant to come on a bike, you know? She got a puncture in the bike, and my granny was over from Dublin, and she delivered me, and that's where we were from. Well, then we moved to another kind of different type of estate. But we were forever known as, me and my brother, the little Irish boys.
And was your dad Irish?
Dublin, yeah.
Dublin. And Cabra. And George, yeah, because there's Georges in Cabra, that's right, yeah.
Cabra, and that was from Conra. She was from around Joyce Road that way.
And what was her name, maiden name?
Maloney. So in the 50s, they went over to England to get work, because everybody did, had a few of us, came back. Because even as kids, we were always like, we're going home, you know. We'd visit, and we'd have a strong connection. Betty, who's my mom, her sister was in Liverpool, so we were up and down there. That's a strong Liverpool connection of a huge amount of cousins there. And now my sister, Jer, who you know.
I know Jer.
She lives there with her partner.
Jer's an actor.
She is, and she's a grandmother now. She's a great-grandmother. No, Betty's a great-grandmother. Jer's
yes, a dad, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Little Amber from Liverpool, Amber. So that was the kind of setup there. You know, it's funny, I was actually thinking about it this morning. As I said, myself, my brother Desi played football, and the two things that city had, it's a small little city, I mean, it's all right, it won't be setting the world on fire or anything like that, but the two things it really has is it's got a huge dockland, big docks area. That's where the QE2 comes in, or I remember, huge big docks. And football, they had a good football academy.
Of course, yeah. The football. No, I don't know anything about football, yeah. But I know there's a team.
The Saints, yeah.
Because I tell you, there's a young person I worked with in Ballymun, went to play with Southampton, and it was a big thing.
They've a great academy. They don't do well as a team. They're a selling team.
It's the academy. That's right. Yeah, it's huge, yeah.
I mean, that level is fucking... I wasn't a bad old footballer in my day, but when you came across Shelbourne and those types of teams and you played against them in a cup match, you saw, it's like, ah, fuck, forget it. You know what I mean? These guys were out of this world. One of my abiding memories of living where we lived as a kid was, again, being referred to as the Irish boys, right?
Yeah.
We were kind of... There was a lot of old trauma in the family, you know, dad was not present and plenty of people have those sob stories, so we'll get into all of that. I wanted to have a bike. I was about 6 or 7, 8, wanted to have a push bike. And this young fella in the street says, hey, oh, you can have that. And he had a little go on it. He said, nah, keep it, mate, keep it. I said, lovely, bought the bike home. Master said, dad, not okay with that, bring that back. No, he gave it to me, Put it in the shed. The other thing was, the other thing that was funny was when we were young kids, obviously from my parents, we had strong Dublin accents as kids. And then when we went out into school, they were all slagging us like, what do you mean, tree? It's fucking free, isn't it? All that time. But then we had to assimilate a bit.
Of course, yeah.
We're kind of in between. But anyway, this young fella, keep the bike. This is about 6 o'clock in the evening. So I'm delighted. The bike's in the shed and I'm dreaming. I get up in the morning and it's like, and I had that little flickery thing on the, it's a lovely little thing. And there was a bit of trauma going on in the house. I remember the feeling of fear hanging around. Anyway, an hour or two later, the door banged down, boom, boom, boom. There's this mad wailing woman, a big fat bitch of a woman, right? Remember, she picked those big arms with tattoos on. You fucking Irish cunt, stole my son's bike. There was blatant murder. And I'm there in the background going, the blood is draining from me. One, oh shit, what's good? There's no man around to protect us. Yeah. My ma's not a fighting type of woman. She wasn't feeling well. She was lying on the couch going, what's going on? And it all kicked off. And then I had to go give the fucking bike back.
Yeah.
I woke up bikeless. That was one of my first experiences of dissociation. I don't remember after that till the next day sometime being in school and having some, was that a dream? Hey, that's one of my memories.
Dissociation.
We talked about dissociation last week. I was trying to explore it a little bit more. Hey, Jimmy, psychotherapist?
Apparently.
What the fuck is dissociation?
I will try and have a crack at it, but what I'm going to refer you or your listeners to is, I know you both know her, I know you know her, Dina, Anne O'Connell, colleague, dear friend of mine, wrote a piece on dissociation. It went into the Inside Out magazine, which is an IHIP psychotherapy magazine. You can get it online. The title was Time Out of Mind, which she took from Bob Dylan's album, Time Out of Mind. But she was describing it in such a different way than you get in all the textbooks, what dissociation was and how important it was to dissociate. And as a therapist, rather than the tendencies you're trying to get someone to, oh, you're dissociating, let's stop you or slow you down, get in with the person. Because that's where the gems are in there.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like a dream. So in simple language, dissociation is a bit like, the mild version of dissociation is, I don't like this experience, I'm going to pretend something else is happening. It's literally an extension of that. It's that at a deeper level. When the system kicks in, the amygdala says, too much, and it overrides it with certain chemicals. And it's like you have a memory loss. It's like being, actually, very similar to when you're drunk, you have a blackout. You don't actually fall asleep.
I had a blackout last week.
Did you have one?
I've never had one before.
Just for everyone that's listening.
It's a revelation.
Dino has his hands out like the
Messiah. It's a revelation. I never had a blackout before, as far as I can remember. Do you like that one?
Hey. Arc within an arc.
With alcohol.
Because I would drink, but I don't. I'm not an alcoholic. I always thought I was going to be an alcoholic because it runs in the family.
Can we just pause there for a second? Was that a bit of denial going on there, Sparky? I don't know.
But I think...
Hopefully.
Go on with your story.
What I would answer that is with Dean always, when you say, I'm not an alcoholic, I would always throw in, not yet.
No, I'm not.
I hear you.
I had a blackout though. I drank.
Because all alcoholics are sober. You never, as someone once famously said, if you walked into a bar into the tower and someone said, any alcoholics in here? Fuck off. They're all in AA. Go on.
No, but I had a blackout. And I was drinking Guinness and whiskey. The amount that I would normally drink, but then this time I had a blackout, and it was a blackout. It was terrifying. It was fucking really interesting. It was a wake up call. It was like a rude awakening. Fucking hell! Banged me head, hurt me eye, bruises up and down my legs, ripped the arse of me bleeding underpants. I think I fell up the stairs and down the stairs and then back up the stairs.
Back up again.
Fucking interesting.
There's a song in that. He fell up the stairs and down the stairs.
And smacked his bleeding eye.
What's the saying again? What's that other saying?
Get on.
No, they won.
Hold on a sec. Say it again. You fell up the stairs?
I fell up the stairs and down the stairs and back.
Get on.
But I don't think I ever had one that I can recall. Anyway, so you were talking about blackouts.
So if you want to understand dissociation, understand blackout. It's the very same thing, except you haven't drank or taken a chemical. So you've got a period of time where you don't quite recall what happened in that time.
Right.
And it's a trauma response.
Is it an automatic trauma response as opposed to...
I've had one.
Yeah, bet you have.
I've had one.
As opposed to one that you're cognitive of.
Absolutely. It's different to being like, oh, fuck, I'm getting out of here. This is too much.
I'm going to go in here and clean the kitchen and get away and just...
Exactly. I'm going to sing and da-da-da-da-da. It's unconscious. It's a very deep survival mechanism piece.
Comes from, obviously, the brain?
Yeah, from the amygdala. Sounds really good to say that, doesn't it? Like, I know what I'm talking about.
So I don't know whether this is one, right? I was in the car one day. I got a phone call.
I feel this is turned to therapy. Okay,
sorry, no, but I got
it. You are a bleeding therapist.
Like, they're getting a free session here.
We do this all the time anyway.
So. I know.
I got news about something, and I won't say what it was, right? But I got really bad news. It was a suicide thing, right? Okay. So I got this. But I had been in touch with that person the day before.
Yeah.
So I pulled the car in at the shops up in Central, right? Pulled the car in and I fell asleep. Now that's what, to me, I would have said, I fell asleep. But maybe it was a blackout.
It sounded, it could well have been.
Because I was so engaged in the whole thing, like, that it just caught me. I wasn't
sleep fell
that.
On you.
Yeah, that's what it was like. But I remember saying it to a therapist at the time, and she said that was your survival. Mm-hmm. That's how you go out cold, yeah, you know.
Brain survival, man. Not a mess. What I take here. I was saying to you earlier on, I think you were getting me tea, Sparky, earlier on. Thank you very much. I was chatting to Dean when we were outside. And I said, remind me to talk about my phone the other day, what happened. And It wasn't quite a dissociation, but something traumatic happened and it was a great ending, right? So I'm coming out. I was at a funeral down in Lourdes in Sean McDermott Street. A friend of my ma's was there. And I came out of the funeral and I'm on my way back up to work. So I come out of Lourdes, turn right up onto Sean Mac, and I'm going down towards Garden Street to turn right to go up. And my ma lives just there and my work is another few minutes up the road. So I had a coat on and I didn't put my phone properly in my pocket because I had a hat or a scarf there. And I remember clocking it and kind of going, I'll fix that in. And I'm walking up that. Now, this all happened really, really quickly, right? So I'll put my headphones on, Bluetooth, to listen to music as I do. Don't let it pass you by. That's what I was listening
what
to.
What a tune.
Oh, what a tune indeed. And they passed me by. So three different groups of people. That's a busy area, right? That's. I was just saying to someone else, I feel more safe there than I do anywhere. It's not that I know everyone, but I kind of have a sus of the place. I know it. Know people. There were people coming from the funeral that I knew. And anyway, these three different people passed me by. And then next minute, the music stopped on my phone. And I tapped my pocket. It's gone. So that moment. So talk about something deeper going on from the unconscious, right? You two know me. If you think Jimmy George, you don't think he'd punch the fucking head off you. You'd be thinking he'd light a candle and sit around with you and hold your hands and talk peace, right? But something kicked in. I didn't decide it. I'm getting my fucking phone back. Think of it. Busy guy. What am I going to do? Who's going to say, yeah, I have it? Whoever robbed it was going to say, take it off me now. And what? Yeah, fuck off, you muppet. You know, that's what you're probably going to meet. Or everyone's going to say no. But I fucking started running back down the street to try and trace these three groups of people that passed you by. And all that was in my mind was, I'm getting my phone back. Then there was another little voice going, what are you going to do when you get there, Jimmy? Right? So for the first group, just see your phone, lad. Just see your phone. What a stupid question. Just see your phone, lads. They're looking at me like, fuck off, you muppet. Right? Type of thing. Second group of guys who I think were foreigners. Well, I don't know what you're fucking talking about. So the two people I suspected, it was a couple that bumped off me. And I remember him clearly. He had these brilliant tattoos across his forehead. And I just went bounding towards him like, cunt must have got a terrible fright. If only you knew who I really was. Like, I said, here, mate. Yeah, yeah. And he turned around and he went, is this your phone? He was a Nordy. I was just on my way down the store street to hand it in. You know? Big bang, a gargle off him. So I was having an inner conflict. Like, maybe he was, but I knew he wasn't. He fucking dipped me, you know what I mean? Obviously. And then he started, and his board said, yeah. And she started moving around and we're chatting. And he said, what are you listening to? And we talked about music. Next minute, we're talking about addiction and what I work on. He needs to get off the right drink. He's drinking too much. We're having a therapy session. I give the two of them a hug and I leave.
They fucking managed you well.
Phone. I didn't give a fuck once I got my phone back. There was no fucking violence at all. You know what I mean?
That is savage. Because I was thinking you had dropped the phone and as you were running back up the road.
He picked it up.
No. Don't let it pass you. And you had the phones on the ground or something.
Yeah.
Don't let it pass you, boy. Yeah.
So we had this dissociation there.
We'd something going on, Dean, where if I had just went into my ordinary mind, that I'd have probably froze and went, look, fuck, I'll get another phone, you know. I haven't the head for all that. I don't want to be fighting with anyone. I don't like fighting, blah, blah, blah. Something kicked in where I ran towards rather than away from. So I suppose when it was afterward, I felt kind of good about myself, you know, because I can step up if I need to. Had he said, like, take the fucking thing off me, I don't know. I can't honestly say I'd punched the head off him, but it had to go.
So I was trying to explore that with Trina O'Connor, who we had in The Criminologist last week, because she had mentioned disassociation on the Pat Kenny show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in it and teasing it out because I heard it in relation to the gangs in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
How did they go and, you know, murder 20 people and hang them out with lampposts? Mm-hmm. It's because of this disassociation that happens, because they're almost separate. Mm-hmm. From their humanness.
Did that happen in World War II? I remember watching a documentary one time about the rise of the Nazis, and one of the first places that they occupied was Latvia. So they had an area there that where they started to do the experiments around the concentration camps and the mass killing of people. This is where they did their experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they were doing was they were shooting people. And I remember this image of a woman with a child getting brought up to be shot. And she asked, would they shoot the child first? Right. And I absolutely broke down. I remember watching this documentary and I just broke down. The guy with the gun in his hand, you know, what's he thinking? You know, sorry, could you shoot him first? Because I don't want him to see me dead before he dies.
Yeah, no problem.
No problem. Yeah, hold on. Stand over there, son.
Get out of the way.
How do you do that? How do you get a group of people to, as Dana's saying, disassociate, right? Because, like, I find my own mind very, very interesting, right? That I've seen people saying, I hate robbers. I hate people that rob, but then they'll fill their car up with stuff out of the factory that they work in, you know what I mean? Mm. And you say to them, but that's robbing. And I said, no, that's different. So they're able to disassociate robbing, you know, or else, you know, somebody who's, I hate addicts. I hate, you know, that's not what they call them, but you know what I mean? I hate those group of people that are on the keys and I hate them and I hate everything about them, you know, but they will actively take cocaine, buying them from the same dealer, buying them from different, and they can disassociate that. And I find that very, very interesting that people saying, I hate lawyers. And then 10 minutes later, they'll tell you a big whopper of a lie, like, you know. Before, I would have judged those people and called them hypocrites. Now I don't. Now I'm more interested in what's going on there, because I do it. I do it as well. You know,
we all do.
I find my own cognitive dissonance, or I found, you know, that kind of, I find it really, really interesting. You know?
Yeah, I'm just listening to you there, Shrek, and I'm thinking there's probably levels and layers of, when we talk dissociation from a trauma perspective, or even from human beings dehumanizing, dissociating from their humanity to carry out barbaric acts that we're talking about, that we know that happens. And it can happen more collectively. You get that kind of group evil. M. Scott Peck, People of the Lie, great book about that group evil. About
People of the
Lie. Of the L-I-A, yeah. So he wrote The Road Less Traveled, that guy. So, you know, people that normally would be very kind-hearted and loving get into a collective mindset and can get into all kinds of stuff. But that's slightly different from the dissociation of growing up in a dysfunctional family where there's terror, you know, maybe fighting, maybe abuse going on, where it's, there's a deeper process of something beautiful and self-serving kicks in to buff you from the pain of what's going on. Okay. It's almost like an opiate comes in, literally. You know, now it has its problems later on, but it's brilliant at the time, right? Yeah. As opposed to the variations of what you're talking about, where as adults, we can kind of be selective. We can justify and rationalize stuff. And the key there is we all do it, but when we're faced with it, can we kind of go, yeah, actually, you're right. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not that deep. But if it's deeper in someone, you would suspect then there's something else going on.
And
you know?
The other one that I'm interested in is almost the other side of it. There's one that's like self-preservation. Mm-hmm. There's one that's like, I'm just going to suit myself here. And then there's another one, which is an extreme survival strategy. For example, in gangland, you have young men shooting each other. You'd often go, how did he do that? Or he must be now his head on coke. But there's also a psychological disassociation that happens because the survival strategy is because of the level of aggression that's required.
100%, Dean, yeah.
That's where I tie it to the Mexican cartels, because I haven't seen it in this country. Other than, say, the Ra. You remember you meet Ra people and they're just a different level of a person. They're a different breed. They've seen something different.
Of course, and there's a whole cause and there's a whole lots of complexities with that. It goes very, very deep. But in terms of just using the gangland, even in Dublin, that with the three of us have experienced and witnessed, be it in Ballymun or wherever, and I have clients who have been through a lot of that stuff, you know, the different feuds and all the rest of it, and all different, because you get some people, they get sucked into it in the normal way, and then, you know, they want to impress the, you know, and they work up the ranks and all of that, and they're buffering the whole way. They're detaching from who they really are, because most human beings, everyone are good, lovable, loving human beings, but stuff happens, right? I'm not justifying shitty behavior. So you get those people, but they get so caught into it, they get layers and layers of defensiveness comes there, and they can put a bullet in someone's head and wouldn't, you know, and they wouldn't be coked out, right? Then there's the ones that are, but then there's the ones that are psychopathic anyway. It's a bit like, say, addiction. People think, Jimmy, you do a bit about narcissism. Are addicts and narcissists the same? I say, no, they're not. In addiction, people can act a bit narcissistic, look that way, but once they go into recovery, they start recognizing who they really are, getting a bit self-honest. All that shit drops away. They move into a much better process. We've met people like that all the time.
Yeah.
If they're narcissistic or sociopathic as well, they're just sober, but just more clever with it. They're worse.
Yeah, yeah.
So, do you know what I mean? So
they're not
like
relying
that.
On the physiological rush of chemicals or the scenario for the switch to be flipped. It's flipped.
Mm-hmm. It's already flipped.
It's in on mode all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
That's someone who, if they say, we can get technical about it, psychopaths are born, sociopaths are made. Different. The sociopath's a bit more chaotic. They're a little bit more reachable, but tricky. The psychopath isn't. I did a podcast on the good psychopath because some of our best surgeons, our best pilots are psychopathic, but they're not serial killers. They don't hurt anyone.
Yeah.
Their brain structure is quite different.
Is it like obsessed?
The psychopathic nature will be obsessive, brilliant strategic minds. They don't sweat. They literally, that's
like
why.
Here, like Prince Andrew.
Yeah. But you know,
I don't sweat when I'm riding 16-year-old humans.
I know. Well, yeah.
Sorry, Andrew, I'm at the defaming you there.
He's never heard that before.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? And those terms often get mixed up. People hear psychopath and they automatically think they're going to be a brutal serial killer. No, they're not. Some of them are, but there's plenty that aren't. Their brains work differently. They don't produce, they don't empathize in the same way.
Yeah, the one that we hear about is like the aggressive, vicious.
Yeah. They're there. And in crime, in gangland, you're more going to get the sociopath because they're more chaotic. And that's like, there is humanity there, but it's fucking all covered up with drugs and madness and behavior and wanting to fit in. And
I love when you say layers, because I was thinking of somebody there when you were talking about the layers, you know, that, you know, behind this person, there is an amazing human being, right? There's mm-hmm. a brilliant. But the layers of toxicity, the layers of, if you want to call it abuse, the layers of negative.
The masks. And
masks and all. And then when you're in this area and you're in a family that has had years of being involved in criminality or whatever it is, like even at a, you know, I remember talking to a fella, this fella was real honest with me one day in town, and he says to me, look at all them youngsters stealing drugs. He said, years ago, he said, there was no CCTV. You were able to go out, rob you a bit of stuff, sell it, sell a bit of stuff.
Come home for your tea.
Come home, and then you get your clubber for the weekend, up to Simon Hart, new pair of shoes, out on the town. He says, that's all gone now. There's no stroking anymore.
The good old days, the good old stroking.
The honest stroking, right?
Ordinary days and criminals.
Yeah.
So that layer, like even that layer, yeah. Even if you have that
those
layer.
Addicts are scumbags, you know what I mean?
So I love when you said layer, I could see it. I could see the layers because, you know, some of the work that, you know, that I'd be doing with people, to me, it'd be real obvious, like, you know, what's going on. You're saying, can you not see that, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I was a young fella, I was about 15, I had a job in a panel beaters. And my job was to clean the car on the inside, you know? Mm. And the boss used to say to me, can you not see that dirt? And I'd be like, what are you talking about? Well, it was real obvious. It was like caked fucking baby food or something, like, you know what I mean, all stuck to the side of the handbrake or something. And I'd be like, oh yeah, all right. And then I go up and but I actually couldn't see it.
That's a great analogy, isn't it? We just don't see it until we see it.
And I think that happens as well in the layers. You know, there's layers there on me that I can't see. You know, there's layers of what happened to me in school, you know, and, you know, as you said, that stuff happened to lots of people. It didn't just happen to me in school. I was in a school with Christian Brothers. They weren't particularly nasty to me. They were just the same to me as they were to everybody else, you know. But there's a layer there. There's definitely a layer there. And I feel it when, even when I go into a church, there's a slight skin of, I hate this. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be part of this. The smell. Mm. I don't want to be in this because they were brutal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the key word in all of that is where. And I'm not in the moment. If I go into the church in the moment, and stay in the moment, I'd be all right, you know. And there are times that I have, like I was at a funeral recently and I listened and I heard the words and they actually meant something to me, you know. They actually helped me grieve the person who had died, you know, because when I stayed in the moment, I heard a fella say to me, you hear a lot of this stuff in recovery, but he says, when I live in the past, I become depressed. When I live in the future, I become anxious. And it's only when I stay in the moment that I'm absolutely present, you know.
Sure, yeah.
That's very hard to do. It's very, very hard. To, yeah. You know, like I was at an 80th party yesterday, you know what I mean? And there's all the stuff, it's all there, like, you know what I mean? I tried to be as much in the present as I could and I had a great time, you know? And, you know, I wasn't going, she didn't buy me a Christmas present in 19, 89 or so. I didn't get into any of that. Because I think the other thing that I do is that I don't invest in relationships because I think I'm going to be let down in the future. Do you understand?
Yeah, I do.
So if I say, you know, I meet my cousin or something, my cousin's a bit aloof or something like that, and I'm like, why would I spend time talking to him?
That's kind of like the great scene in the Psychotherapist film with Matt Damon, is it?
Goodwill Hunting.
Go on, tell us.
And he's going,
it's not your fault.
He's going, yeah, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. He says, you have a great strategy there. If you never allow yourself to fall in love with somebody, you'll never be hurt. So yeah, well done.
Yeah.
He said, what I done with my partner was I fell in love with her and she died and I got hurt and I wouldn't have given that up for anything. Mm-hmm. I can see that one. I see it in my own family where we don't get close if we fall for that person. In your family, inevitably they're going to die.
Yeah, and or let you down by being human.
So when Sparky was talking about the layers and he was saying some people, it's fucking everybody. Mm-hmm. There's not no one. And if there is someone who doesn't have layers or masks, they are either psychopaths or they're spiritually evolved. You know what I mean?
Okay.
They just go off into the ether.
Yeah.
They're like a bleeding guru or something. Your career, your job, your work, your day to day, your bread and butter is layers and masks.
Nuances and yeah, all of that. And like, there's a big, it's maybe an oversimplified question. There's a big question because you're talking about everyone is, and I always take the piss out of addicts, alkies, who I'm one of, in a lovely way about, oh, I can't stand rejection. You know, like fucking everyone can't stand it. Why do you think you're different? You know, but would you rather live cynical, in fear, but lonely, pulling your own wire, so as to speak, psychologically and literally? Or, as you said, Dean, reaching out with that risk that someone may not take your hands. And then what happens? We feel a bit stupid. We feel uncomfortable. Maybe we get triggered in the past stuff, but we breathe through it, stay in the moment, talk to a friend, laugh about it, have a cry about it, listen to some music, jerk off, whatever you want to do, and you start again. The other way, you stay lonely.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like the Goodwill Hunting piece. I was thinking of a funny flipping something around. You know, we're all going with the idea, and we're right to, that deep down underneath all the nuances and layers, all human beings, they were a baby, beautiful little baby, you know, with no fucking harm in them at all. And everyone grows, and no one wakes up and kind of goes, I'm going to become a cunt, right? You don't do it. You aspire to love and be loved. But what if I used to have this fear? Deep down, I find out I am a cunt.
That was kind of like me with alcoholism. Right, what if deep down I find out I am? And it was a fucking real fear.
And the best way to hide, I love existentialism, well, let's just meet that. Well, so what if?
Yeah.
And if, what then? And what does that mean, you know? I don't believe that about you, Dean, but I'm just saying that. What if? To step into that space, to step into the space that we don't usually step into, which is what I love about the work. Let's speak the unspeakable if we can. If it feels safe enough.
What if becoming an alcoholic was the best thing that ever happened to you?
Yeah, there's always that.
Here's what I did do. I did say to myself, I won't drink alcohol anymore.
Did you say that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I had that conversation with myself.
Right.
And it was like the switch. It wasn't vague. It wasn't, and it was very distinct.
And I'm not meaning to get into a session in that sense, Dean, but if alcohol wasn't in your life, say if you followed that, would there be a big loss in your life?
Not at all. 100%.
Right, yeah, it's interesting.
It's great. I'm very privileged. It's a really interesting perspective to have, to just go, I'm all right with that. It was like cigarettes. I was smoking, and during COVID, I was still smoking, and I lost my sense of smell and taste. Mm-hmm. And just like a switch, I went, I don't smoke anymore now. Didn't have any cravings. I get that that's a rare fucking position to have.
It is.
Just to go, I don't need that in my life anymore. Jimmy, George.
Yes, Dino Scurry.
I love you. Thanks for coming in. I love this.
We're midway now. This is midway.
Oh, are we? I have no idea.
I love this chat.
I love you two guys.
I remember seeing you in town about 6 years ago when we walked past each other and I seen
remember.
You.
I remember. You were on the thing, weren't you?
I remember. You know where the Lewis line is just there off Parnell Street?
Mm-hmm.
We walked past each other there and I just went, Jimmy!
Mm-hmm.
And you see me, Dano!
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of got together and gave each other a little hug. And since then, I've fallen more in love with you. I was editing your podcast. Jimmy does a great podcast, The Twilight Conversations. It's about psychotherapy and the nuances of the human condition.
Very irreverent look at psychotherapy, you know, if you know what I mean.
What's irreverent mean?
Disrespectful nearly, you know what I mean? It's not like prison.
Oh, you're kicking holes and you're taking the piss.
100%.
It's not a college course.
No, it's not.
But it fucking could be.
It may be.
Because I'd listened to it when I was editing it.
Have you lectured, Jimmy?
Yeah, lecture sounds a bit like I've given training.
So thanks for coming in. And I was trying to see in my head what would we chat about, because I had you on the Travel on the Countryman podcast, and I was on your podcast.
You were, the two of you were on my podcast.
Oh, deadly.
One of the best experiences of my life.
So we've done loads of the who are you and where are you from.
Yeah, yeah.
And the three of us are similar in age. As Sparky pointed out a couple of...
Well, I'm a bit older than the two of you, I think, am I?
You are.
You are.
I am.
And older and wiser.
Well, that's debatable. I was actually thinking, on that note, I think Sparky and I were talking a bit about it. I was reflecting back. I was saying, remember, I missed the flats. This place, Ballymun, yeah, so we came from England back and we were on the 17A route. We lived on the old 17A route, right? Kilbarrick, Coolock, Ballymun.
The New Delhi Express.
The New Delhi Express. So I settled in Ballymun, and I was saying just that this is the area that I lived in longest, because we were always short times and we're always getting moved around and a lot of chaos and trauma, you know. So I settled in Ballymun in 1980. So this is the place I would call home, even though I don't live here anymore. So I lived about 25 years here. In Stalag, right? And actually, the first flat I was ever in was in Coltridge. It was very near here. I went in with a couple of friends, and then I squatted a place in Changan the way you used to. Then I got Stalag. But my work, my whole, everything is here. And I was saying, if I'm not particularly religious, but if I died, I'd want my ceremony in Holy Spirit in Ballymun in Stalag. And, you know, I met Glenn Hansard and all that life. Yourself, but I was thinking back to when we used to hang out in the guy's flat in James Connolly Tower and playing Don and talking, listening to loads of tea and smokes. And unfortunately, Dean, you weren't there because you were younger, but you still look very young, but you've evolved spiritually incredibly. You're an exceptionally evolved young man. A young man, I would call you.
50 years of age this year.
I'm telling you, but that whole era. And I've really fond memories of that. And I remember you, Sparky, kind of been on the periphery of it. Jeff would have been with you. And you were in it, but you were kind of like a bit amused by what was going on.
Well, I wasn't a footballer. Yous were footballers. Yous had a Wednesday night football. I was really getting into youth work. That's what I was really mad about. I had this notion of myself that I was kind of unique and all this kind of stuff, you know. That's what I was floating on. And I remember meeting you in... The Yap.
The 1A in Balcourse.
And I remember understanding that when I met you that you were sound. You know that kind of thing? You know when you meet people and you're like, right, he's sound or she's sound, whatever it was. And that was...
It's just an instinct, isn't it?
It's an instinct, right? And it was deadly. And I often wondered when I did the podcast with you, the Twilight Conversation, I hadn't seen you in a couple of years, but whatever we had just knitted back in. And Jeff is like that as well. I meet Jeff after 6 months and we're just in. You know what I mean? And there's no... Where have you been? Why didn't you text? None of that. And I think those relationships that you have in your life are very significant, you know?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Yeah. And I think those times were deadly. So there was the football team, right? And then we used to play a kickabout. And I actually felt that the kickabout was more important than the football team. There was a team then that happened. Forget what it was called. Balcourish United or something like that. And that was great for people who were in recovery and stuff like that, because... they weren't welcomed into football teams, you know what I mean? So then there was a route for people to get into football, and it was deadly. But I wasn't interested in that because I wasn't really interested in football. But I was interested in the kickabout. I thought the kickabout was 20 a side, do you remember?
Yeah, I do.
As you remember, there was a deaf fella one night, Paul, and he was looking backwards and the ball came over his head and he ran into the pole.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And he was taken away.
But the game went on. Then they played on.
Then they played. That was the way it was.
But I think what you loved, though, when we went back, it was often Niall's flat because it was the kind of biggest one of all our flats.
The Don,
but the conversations and UB40 would be on and Bowie and
Talk
and all that and Van Morrison and we talk forever about women and life and
religion. David Gray.
David Gray was, you were talking about David Gray in the recent, I listened to the last podcast. Yeah. Or one of the podcasts, and that whole era, and Glenn was coming up at that time as well. And
we used to listen to that David Gray Century Ends album on repeat.
Yes,
in Niall's flat.
Yeah,
and then we start going in to see him. You and you had a friend called Tina.
Yes,
and we used to go in to see David Gray in Whelan's.
That's right,
and that's when I went back in. Yeah. This, I think it was the 30-year anniversary or something like that. The funny thing was I don't do nostalgia anymore. Isn't that a weird one? I don't go in and go, do you remember we used to stand over there? I don't have any interest in that anymore. Oh, I'm real interested in... I did listen to the songs. When I was a young fella, I didn't listen to lyrics. So when the Smiths play it, I'm only listening to their lyrics now. I'm only listening to what Morrissey is saying now.
It was the vibe.
It was the vibe. But I was trying to understand it recently. So I remember listening to Half Full of Hollow on a tape in bed at night time, going to bed and sticking this on and listening to it. back to back, like, you know. And it was, I would remember some of the, you know, I decree that life is simply taken and that, you know, something like that. England is mine and it owes me a live. So I know the lyrics, right? But there's definitely lyrics that I didn't hear, you know, with Morrissey and with Glenn and with, like, I recently listened to a song that Glenn sings called This Gift. This gift will last forever. And I always thought when I heard it, it was about playing the guitar or something like that, you know. But it's more spiritual. Now maybe it's just that I'm having a deeper understanding of it. You know?
Right.
But I'm starting to listen to lyrics. I'm starting to hear lyrics now. And when I was at the David Gray gig, the tour of the year thing, I was like, oh my God, that's what he was singing about. You know what I mean? Because I have the maturity now to understand.
To appreciate it.
To appreciate it, yeah. There was a bit of me, I remember when JD died, I was thinking, I'll never be able to get into all the songs that he was into. Yes. You know, I'd lost that connection with Neil Young and all that kind of stuff. But what's happening to me now is I'm actually appreciating my age, and I'm appreciating where I am now and appreciating that I can hear the music and the lyrics now, you know. And even that good, the guy died during the week, Carl Wallinger died, you know.
It's a car from World Party, didn't
he? Yeah, he died, he had a heart attack,
So does Steve Harley from Cocteau
That's
Rebel.
Right, yeah. And
this Wallinger. Is going to happen a lot to you lads in the next couple of years.
Happens to me all the time.
All the time.
Love World Party. He was with the
Water
Boys.
So what was the song he wrote that Robbie Williams did?
She's the One.
She's the One, right? Again, when I heard Robbie Williams singing it, I never listened to it, right?
Yeah, it kind of pissed me off a bit.
Whatever it was, Carl Wallinger song. But when I hear Carl Wallinger doing it, I really connect with the lyrics.
Put a message in the box and all,
Put the message in the box.
So, Jimmy, some of those stories are from 30 years ago.
Yes.
And this is 30 years on. I was thinking, I said it to you upstairs, if this was your last chat, your last podcast with us, your last podcast ever.
What a great question.
What's the lessons? What's the learning? What's the wisdom? What would the gift you would give back to the 30-year-old Jimmy, who's probably out there roaming around Coolock or Finglas or Ballymun now?
With long hair. It's really long hair. Do you remember that?
I remember that. You had a deadly mullet.
Yeah, and a fucking pair of, they have kind of straps on them.
Dungarees.
Like dungarees. And a dungaree, total sap.
Were they dungarees or dungareens?
Dungarees. Do you remember Wacker O'Hara? You know Wacker O'Hara? You know Pat O'Hara?
Yes, yeah.
Always, no matter where he was, you go, Jimmy, you fucking daisy chain. Peace to you, Patrick.
But they were cool.
Yeah, I thought they were.
They were cool.
But not to avoid that, that's a fantastic question. What would they want to say to 30-year-old me?
Or even to believe 60-odd-year-old you. What the fuck happened in the last 30 years? What's the wisdom? What's the learning? Because I know you haven't just been falling through every day since then.
Yeah, I've been up and down and heartbroken and open and again and in and out of life. And, you know, life stuff happening, family stuff, life. Keep breathing. What would I say? I'm trying to listen to my gut now, my heart. What do I say? Just let me, what's the word, spitball, free associate on this one a bit. It's a psychoanalytic term. Let's free associate. I would say, you're all right. What's that? What's the saying now the kids are saying?
Get on.
Get on.
Get on.
If I was standing on the balcony at Salogue and I'm seeing me going by, I'd whistle. You're fucking cool. Just keep being you. Keep being you. There's nothing wrong with you.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with you.
And the mad thing was, Jimmy, you used to say that stuff to me. You used to say stuff to me and to other people who are part of that group. Isn't it great? You know, because those, the conversations we're having now, like I remember going back into recovery and back into the rooms. And one of the things that I really connected with is those deep conversations. And a lot of people in the rooms are men. Don't have these conversations with each other. You know, it's all Liverpool and Man United. And, you know,
I played and rolled up against the wall several times.
There you go.
Banged her all night.
Yeah, you can have them conversations because you're into that, but you don't have those conversations with me or with Sparky. I definitely don't have them with Sparky. And I know somebody who was going to you for chats.
Chats, let's say, inverted commas.
And the thing you kind of revealed to them was, you're all right the way you are, who you are, and I'm just going to help you see the masks and the layers, as Sparky was saying.
It sounds simple, and it is that simple. I think there's nothing wrong with us. There's nothing wrong with
us. Just like you're shouting off the balcony to that young lady, you're great.
There's nothing wrong. There's what's wrong is all the layers and the masks, and I get it, you need them, but you know, like that question, what would I regret? I don't think I'd regret anything. Hug the people you hug. We meet, we hug and we kiss, Stephen. Right? Mm. Beautiful. You know, I don't want to be looking back on it. I wish I had of. I wish.
Yeah.
I'm going to use the word love, if people think it's common. I'm using it in the broadest sense of the term. It's all about love. I'm not the first person to say that.
Yeah.
It's all, at the end of the day, your head hits the pillow. What's really important?
I did an interview with a student colleague the other day. We had to do an exercise about research and it was about our values, right? I mean, when do we talk about our values? And I was like, I'll interview you first, you know?
I see what you've done there, right?
Yeah, I interview you first and then I'll take... But one of the things he said about his values was love, you know? And I was like blown away by that because I think if you were to ask me, why do I do the job that I do? It's got to do with love.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my boss asked me the other day, what's the reason why I go into work? I had no answer for him, right?
You love it.
And it's love. Love is the answer. And that sounds so fucking cheesy,
right? I know,
right?
Doesn't it?
But that's what it is because I got up this morning.
John Lennon knew it.
I got up this morning, I got up this morning to come here. But after here, I'm going to do a music group. And I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love being in it. Now, is there fear in there? 100%. Will they show up?
Mm-hmm.
Will the guitars be working? They were broke last week. I had to solder two guitars last week. Do I have to do all that stuff? So the fear is in there, right? But there's also love where I'm looking forward to music being made and people creating and in there as well as arguments and there's all that kind of stuff. And I love all that, you know, because I get people to work it out. But I'm kind of saying the same thing to those people. You're all right. You're grand. Mm-hmm. Happy days. When I was in Alice Springs, right, for 6 weeks on my own, right, and I needed to go. Like, I didn't go to Alice Springs unwillingly. I went there for 6 weeks because I was absolutely doing Groundhog Day here. And you could say Alice Springs and that whole area is a very spiritual place. You could say that, and I definitely leaned into that. But I learned that I was okay. And this is how I learned it, right? At one day I was there, I just said, you could be anywhere, Sparky. You could be anywhere in the world and you'd be you and you'd be grand. And isn't that amazing?
Mm.
You know, there is a song that says you could be anywhere. What you were saying to that person or what you helped that person to come to believe, right? I came to believe myself in Alice Springs and I think it's got to do with that I had the time to do it. I had the quiet time to sit with myself and say, do you know what, Sparky? You're fucking sound.
Mm-hmm.
You're grand. Mm-hmm. And just keep doing what you're doing. Now, the thing is, when I was leaving Alice Springs, my tutor rang me one day and she said to me, what's your ambition? And this is, I'm giving you the short version. What's your ambition? And I was like, I have no ambition. She says, no, I don't mean ambition as in you want to be a manager, or you want to be the CEO of CDYSB or any of that kind of stuff. What's your ambition? And my ambition is to try and do what I do a bit better, you know? And even when, you know, we sat with Dean and had a conversation about the podcast last week, and I'm saying, I want to do this better. That's what I want to do. I want to do the job I do in the youth centre a bit better. I want to be a little bit more present. I think Gandhi said it, and he said, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. And exactly. I think this was part of that with me. Like, you know, I was walking out last week, and the garden outside the club was all full of fucking rubbish and all that kind of stuff. And he said, that won't change unless I change it. You know, and I had to get into it and do it. And I had the joy. The joy wasn't standing back looking at it going, well, that's lovely now, isn't it? The joy was the cleaning of it, the doing it, the getting into it. That's the ambition, ambition.
I was thinking of the late and great, and I don't know about you, Sparky, but I certainly know Dino would have been a fan. Bill Hicks, one of those influential, not only comedians, but philosopher for me. And we know we're talking about layers and complexities of life, but he broke it down. Love or fear? Read what you like. It comes down, what are you choosing today? Love or fear? And I get frightened, but I'm trying to choose love. You know, I'm not pretending I'm not frightened. I'm trying to choose love. That doesn't mean like, oh, you're a psycho. Come on in. You have to be wide. You know, there's a few bogeys, but we can still love them from a distance. But I consciously try to choose love every day. And don't necessarily mean just in a romantic sense. And the other thing I love about Bill Hicks, as a therapist, a psychotherapist, whatever the fuck that means. What does that mean? You know, hi, I'm Jimmy. I'm a psychotherapist. You know, I remember in the beginning, like, I liked the sound of it. Now it's a bit naff. But I remember Bill Hicks talking about music. He says, I want my fucking musicians to bleed. I want to know they've been down in the shit and the dirt. And in a way, I like to impart that to my clients when they come in. So I do a shit on the floor in front of me. There you go. Just so you know.
Session one, shit on the floor.
There you go. We're all in the same boat here, right? I actually don't do that. Why do I even need to call it?
I leave that to session six.
In case someone's wondering, does he really? I have your lunch and all in front
cancel,
of people.
Cancel that appointment with Jimmy George.
But the message I really want to send, and it was kind of unconscious, but it's becoming consciously now, is not only are you okay, but whatever part of you feels un-okay, so do I. You know, I'm just happen to be in this seat and I have a bit of a different view of it. Maybe I can give you a little dig around, to, you know, dig out to see that.
Billy Connolly. Me and you are Billy Connolly fans.
Love him.
He went to a fortune teller or something like that, one of these, and he said, this is all out of the shit. Like, you know, but your man said to Billy that he's seeing life sideways. And you were a bit like that as well. You know, I'd say something to you and you'd say, you have a great way of saying it in a picture. You tell a story, right? You know, we were talking about one day about I was out painting the gate. And then the album comes along and she says, you can go up and do mine. Right?
And with a little, like, little kick of the leg.
Little kick of the, yep, you know. Yeah. And she's kind of, you know, going off happy that she's had a little interaction, you know.
Little smile, maybe a little fantasy. Maybe he'll come up and bang me from behind. Maybe. You might be there, might be there. You know, just might be there, you know. I saw the way he looked at me.
Do you know what? She probably was, actually. I wasn't just thinking about that. But you do, even in that conversation we've just had there, you've opened up another window. You've opened up something else. Like, I have a mate in Belfast called Flair.
All right, Flair, what about you?
What about you, Flair? Flair has an amazing way of opening them windows politically. You know, so you're talking about politics and stuff like that. You know, he'll open you up to that disconnected thing that, you know, he'll connect you. You kind of go, Oh yeah. I don't actually like armies and I don't like stuff like that. And he'd open it up, like, you know, and you're like that, you know. I think you have a great knack. I don't know whether it's a natural thing that you've had always or there's something that you've learned and developed, but you've a great way of opening up little doors and you kind of go have a look in. But what's great with you, Jimmy, is it's safe.
What film's that from? Is it safe?
And when I met you and I said, he sound, I think that's important, that you have a significant adult person in your life that you're safe with, or that you feel like when I go into recovery rooms, I always feel safe. And I think that that's important. You know, I've heard young people I meet when they're 30s and they say to me, the youth club is a safe place, you know, and that's really important. If you're safe with somebody and they're opening up, they're saying to you, have a look at that, you know, there's something new. You're like that as well, Dino, you know what I mean? You're
100%.
Kind of, you do it in a different way, you do it, but it's the same thing. We are opening up. What about that? What about this?
And if you can combine that, particularly as a therapist or if you're working with people with it, because look, I'll open mine, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying
is that part of the dance?
Not all therapists agree with that,
never mind. You're not all therapists, but I think you kind of revealed that a few minutes ago when you said, sometimes I find the phrase psychotherapist a bit naff, because you can play the helper and the helped game. You know what I mean? I'm here to help you and you're here to be helped. Well, it looks like what you do is you go, right, let's get rid of that for the moment. Let's push that out to the side. And this is who I am. Who are you? And let's share a little bit.
Pretty much. That's beautifully put. You both avoided the question. What film is that from? Is it safe?
Is it safe?
Iconic line. I'll give you the actress. I'm not ignoring what you said just there.
No, go on.
It was lovely what you said. Laurence Olivier.
Too old for me.
Jimmy.
Dustin Hoffman.
You were 60 odd years of age.
This was a fucking iconic film.
When you were
film.
Fucking 10.
Dustin Hoffman Black and Laurence days, Olivier.
In the same film, yeah.
Wow, come on, tell us. Dustin Hoffman must have been about 11. Mrs. Robinson.
No, great film. You transseduced me. Marathon Man. Marathon Man.
Do you know what? Funny enough, a film I seen when I was a kid, right, and loved it, but I've never watched it as an adult, and I must do it.
Watch it as an adult, Marathon Man. But is it safe?
I know.
What's he doing, drilling his teeth or something?
Never gone to a dentist safely since. No,
so anyway, classic avoidance technology there.
God, I just put it out there to see what you pick up on that. What might I have been avoiding there? Hold on a minute.
The helper and the help.
This is the back of the 36 bus.
The helper and the help.
Oh, yeah, ask the question for go on, Dana.
Because me and Sparky are in kind of community work, youth work, and we could be seen as the classic helpers. Because what you're trying to do is show the person that's in front of you that they're all right. Actually, they probably don't need you all the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're trying to do yourself out of work.
That's it. And because of that, I'm full all the time. That's the paradox. I'm trying to do myself out of work, and here's my little brag. I never advertise, but I have a full practice for near going on 40 years, bump, 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 bump. You know, I might add, I have made mistakes. There are things I've done I regret. I think, wish I had handled that differently. Of course. You know, I'm not just saying it all works out great. But by and large, because I want to reduce, and the more now I'm thinking, like, well, I'd love to retire, they're coming up, there's more coming. You know what I mean?
I don't think you should retire. I think you should do it when you're in the wheelchair.
I know what I mean is by that, I've said this quite a lot. I'd like it to be that I don't need it economically to pay the bills. Yeah. Pick and choose. If I had enough money, I'd come up, I'd work in Ballymun, I'd work in anywhere where people might need a bit of something and they might normally get to see a therapist. I'd like to do that.
That's steady.
You know.
And a good therapist. I think that's the
other thing. A bloody good one indeed.
No, but I think it's important to have a good therapist.
But you see a good therapist.
I heard you saying there about Dean. What I would see what you were saying there is that we're trying, I remember somebody saying they were describing Outreach, and this is years ago, and they said, it's like we're trying to hold these people until they can, you know, kind of, and it was a great analogy of the work that they were doing, was trying to hold people in a nice, safe way till they kind of get onto. But I have this argument in college all the time about being a professional and a practitioner, right? I say I'm a youth work practitioner. I'm not a professional because I'm aligned with the young people. I'm an ally for the young people. Mm-hmm. I'm not an ally for academia or you know, professional teachers and social workers and all that kind of stuff. So when I'm in the room, I'm aligned to the young person. That's my primary purpose, you know? And I'm wondering, does that come into it for you? You're saying, I'm a psychotherapist, and somebody comes into you and you're talking about shitting on the floor and all, right? They're like, what the fuck's going on here?
I think I've stumbled into the wrong room.
I think a therapist like you, people will lean into you, you know, safely. You know, they feel a lot safer rather than somebody going in with a, you know, with a notepad and a pen and saying.
Well, some people might, and some people might prefer.
That's the other thing as well.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that we've known three of us in our work, and I was actually speaking recently about this, of doing outreach and overlapping into the youth work. And it would have been, well, Dino would have been a young fella kind of at that time.
Yeah.
But you're in work, and we'd refer people to each other. So
that's right.
And I know we're all about the same thing. I just have a psychotherapy room in this name, and maybe they explore it in a different way. But the same attitude, I just want to see you. I want you to know you're okay. You can do this. Breathe. Let's be. I want you to be you. And even if being you, you have different opinions to me, just be you and be okay with you. Because I don't. Right, roll my sleeves up now. Just let me get this out. I just need to say something here to you two gentlemen. This is going to sound a little bit controversial. I don't really believe in psychotherapy. Let me rephrase that. I don't believe in traditional psychotherapy. I don't believe that there is really good, healthy people who have somehow that, you know, and there are people like us who are all fucked up and we're trying to be like them. When am I ever going to get there? I believe we're in a world that is both beautiful and ugly, quite imperfect, very fucked up in many, many ways, lots of fucked up systems, but there is opportunity to create heaven here. And we know there is certainly fucking hell here, right? I think it's impossible to not be fucked up on earth, regardless of your background. Yeah, the background might be an influence. Going into therapy or group therapy or self-help, brilliant. Do all of that. Do all of that. This is on my recent podcast, so it's fresh. Do all of that. But never ever feel that you're less than anyone. Never feel that you're not getting it right. No one fucking gets it right. This is a treacherous fucking journey, no? With lots of magic in it as well. So we have to be fucked up.
Yeah.
I want people to have permission to be fucked up.
But you're also saying I'm fucked up.
So 100%.
So what you're doing is you're dissolving the helper and the helped, or the psychotherapist and the client dynamic. You're going, I'm going to go into this room and talk, and you're going to go in and talk, and both of us are going to listen to each other, and we're going to do it as humans. And my kind of trick is to show you very quickly, I'm as fucking human as you are, and you're as fucked as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, there's healing for both of us.
100%, yeah.
But
yeah,
if you're not trained, I think what you're talking about is great, but if, and this is going to sound ageist, but if an 18-year-old bloke or girl said to me, right, I'm setting up a psychotherapy, what's your training? No, I'm just going to get people, I'm going to tell everyone I'm at. So I think there's a process of where you've got to with this. Because one of the things that absolutely blows me away with you, Jimmy, is, right, so we do the podcast, right? Sometimes me and Dean do a podcast together, and I listen to it, and it's amazing. Because I think the interaction between the two of us is deadly.
Yeah, you can feel the relationship.
We've stopped talking to Peter Jordan the week now, so that we have all it all saved up. And you do a podcast on your own sometimes. Yeah. Just talking.
Most of the time on my own, I interview people as well.
But the ones you do on your own, I'd be like, how? I'm admiring your work. I think that is deadly.
Thank you, Sparky. Appreciate that. It's a niche audience, isn't it? I know there's a group of people that totally love the type of stuff I'm talking about because it's a bit funny and I use loads of music references and film references and they like that. You know, so it's kind of interesting that way. There'll be people that wouldn't be interested in it, but I know there's a group that would.
You said something there that was nice, that love, but there's also the shit. There's also hell.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like heaven and hell right here.
Mingled together.
All mingled together. One doesn't work without the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's an acceptance there. We get attached in our heads to, we just want the rushes. We just want the love. We just want the highs. And then there's a moment in your life when you go, there might be something to be learned from the other stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you go off and learn that for a couple of years. And then you come back and you get this wider appreciation of both of it.
Yeah.
Is there a Leonard Cohen reference there, Jim?
There's probably loads of Leonard Cohen references. Well, I'm thinking of something you probably heard of, Sparky. I'm sure you have, Dino, but I know it's used in the fellowship a lot. That's why I'm referring to Sparky and it. Like that, you know, religion is for people who are afraid of hell. Spirituality is for people who've been there. That kind of vibe, you know. And I just want to come back to something you said. I don't mean to, there's fabulous training in psychotherapy. I don't mean to diss the deck. There's brilliant. I mean, I love Jung. I love Yalom. I love all the stuff. And of course I had to do training. So my apologies if I was trying to, by people that are there kind of going, I'm on a fucking course working my ass off here. You know, I don't mean to disrespect that. Of course that has to be done as well. Even Freud said it. When you do all that, fuck it away. Because when you met with the mystery of another human being, I love the mystery of the human being. I love that encounter. Like that spark that happens in that moment. Like, it's like you talked, Sparky, about being in the present moment. It doesn't matter. Us three are here in this present moment and all that I and the love I have for you and I've known over the years, that's not gone away, but there's something now happening. That phenomenology, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, there is a phenomenon happening right now when three of us come together in the same space.
We're all jizzing off together here. Remember those kids.
We've had teeth being drilled. We'd have jism. We'd have fucking
shits on the floor.
Shits on the floor.
I think Jimmy needs psychiatric care.
Fucking right,
Jimmy. You know when you're on a down, when you're heading to the bottom of the down, and you haven't quite got to the bottom of the down.
Well, I'm hurting today about something. I'm really sad about.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I won't get into it because it involves other people and yada yada yada.
So, yeah. I'm interested in. Not the details of your down, but just downs in general. And when you're coming to the bottom of it, and then you're at the bottom, and then you're, how long do you sit there and how do you come back up? I think that's a lovely fucking space.
It's a beautiful way to describe it, Dino, yeah. Breathing is involved. Again, I use the word paradox a lot. The willingness to be in it, not, what's that word? Not
wallow. Dwell,
not wallow. Breathe through it. You did a lovely motion with your hand there, Dino. It's got a natural, like even you dip. You got to let the dip happen. Don't jump out of there too quickly.
Like a U-bend.
Like a U-bend and let it come. Like surfing in the world of the fine art, you come up.
So I used to think I was the dip.
Okay.
And something that I've learned.
Right.
It's like the analogy of the cloud. I used to think I was the cloud.
Right.
True time and true experience and true being, having highs and having lows and being hurt and having love and all that type of stuff and laughing and crying and feeling all the feelings. I kind of pull back a little bit and get an awareness that I am the sky and the cloud comes in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the dip. There's something else happening. There's a wider awareness.
Yes.
And I can sit back and not wallow in it and not indulge in it, but just
look but don't stare.
Accept it and understand it and allow it.
Yeah, allow it, breathe, accept, words like acceptance. Leonard Cohen's song might be If You Want It Darker.
Now, the Leonard Cohen one I was thinking of, but I think he robbed it from Yeats, which was The Light Comes Through the Crack.
The Crack, yeah, that's a crack.
But he robbed that from Yeats, did he?
I think a lot of things are recycled. Yeah.
And that would be the thing that I would shout over to the young fella, who I was.
Okay, what would the,
do you know what I mean?
Same question
I would
to
go,
the two of you.
Stuff is going to happen.
It's going to be shit.
It's going to be great and shit. And just allow it to happen.
But you were right all along, not in a self-righteous way. You were right all along about having a true heart.
Yeah.
Not that you're right and everyone's wrong. It's not that right. Just trust your true heart.
Yeah, trust your love.
Trust your love. You were right all along. You knew it all along.
In me, that's spiritual intuition.
Yes, yeah.
That's the way I kind of phrase it. You know what I mean?
Do you know what I love? Yeah. And it's a marketing strategy. It's a corporate brand. But I love to just do it. You know, the
Nike does it, but just do it.
Just do it. Just do it. And I think...
Do it, man.
Do it.
Do it, but in South Africa.
Dean, you were talking about, like, I was in that space that you're talking about recently. Yeah,
what would you say to you?
That's what I said, just do it.
Same
just
question. Oh, right.
Just do
sorry.
It. Okay. Just do it. That's what I'm saying. Just do it. So I was in that space you were talking about, that the U-band, you know. And so I've been through it.
I'm in the U-band right now.
Okay.
I'm so, right in there. Heavy heart, loss, pain.
It's so nice, like, that you can say it and you can share it. Because I was there. He's probably coming in there. You are there.
I'm coming. I'm taking flight now.
Right.
At the minute where I'm, like, I remember going into a meeting one day in early recovery, you know, and this man said, "How are you, Ray?" And I said, "I'm okay." And he said, "I'll have fucking okay any day," he says, you know.
Okay is great.
Okay is great.
Boring is great, isn't it?
Oh, no. Come here. Everything is great. The darkness, when you've no words, when you've no way of expressing it, when you've no way of tuning into it and stuff like that, is a really, really bad place. So people will say to me, "Why didn't you ring me when you were in the darkness?" And I was just it was just hard enough to try.
If I could have, I would have.
Yeah, but and I know people mean well. You know?
Of course.
Why didn't you ring me, for fuck's sake?
Yeah, I'm trying to listen at that point and not speak. Because sometimes when I put my words in it, I try and define it. It's like looking at the cloud and you're trying to, you're talking, just look at the fucking cloud.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you do a deadly thing. You go into nature. And I hear you when you're in it. You walk into nature and you go deep into nature. I'm learning from that, because that's what I did a week ago. I kind of went into nature, and it wasn't, you know, it was just the sea, it was the beach. But I went, and it was a real instinctive thing. I was driving past it. I said, "I'm fucking going here," you know, and I sat with the sea, like, and it was lovely, you know. What happened to me was, is that this darkness came 3 weeks after the last one, you know, and I'm like, is this the fucking cycle now? You know,
it's a 3 week darkness cycle.
Here we go. Like, this is, this time, I was kind of going, yeah, this is all right. You know, you said boring's okay. This was all right. This was like, I wasn't in there going, oh my God, I can't get out of this. Like,
and imagine how futile it is comparing one cloud to another cloud.
Exactly.
Try do that and see what wisdom you get from it.
I want to say something to the both of you.
Yeah.
Say something to the both of you. Spike, I think you have a tenacity, almost a grudging kind of fight for your recovery in a way, and to fucking learn and keep at it, and, you know.
Oh, 100%.
Love that in you. Just no matter, you're curious and you keep going at it, and I love that in you, you know. Dino, you've got a ferocious fearlessness, even though you're afraid, the way you meet life. Do you know what I mean? The way you're out there. Whether it's Apollo, whether it's just I've seen the two of you, how you operate with people in Ballymun. Love that in you. It's like a daring. You've got a daring, a beautiful daring. You've got a solid fucking tenacity. I mean, them two combinations. No, there's much more to the two of you, but they're things that strike you straight away. That, and just even watching you operate there, and that kind of turns me on to want to be a better. I want to be a better me. You make me want to be a better man. What film is that from?
That's your ambition.
Yeah. It's
my way of explaining it to people is, it's like home story more. When you're gone, you're gone.
When you're gone.
So while you're here, if you can, turn it up to 11.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't go to 11. Well, try it. See what happens. Mm-hmm. And part of that would be my fear of not being here. What's it like when you're not here, when you don't exist? Mm-hmm. And that existential thing. Mm-hmm. So what I do is, to calm that down, to be aware of that, to breathe into that, is I connect with nature. Mm-hmm. So I'm not separate from nature. So I'm not separate from the one, or the energy, or the whatever that is.
The great gig in the sky, yeah.
When I'm separate from that, when it's just Dean, I can get fucking afraid. Even here with yous two, it's lovely. It's really, really nice. It's not just, and I don't mind being on my own. I don't mind being in isolation, but I'm just talking about a wider awareness, a spiritual awareness. It's not just me and my ego and my fears. It's a shared love across the whole universe.
Yep. Love it.
Jimmy George.
Dino Scurry.
Love you, bro.
Love you, bro. Love you, Sparky.
Love you.
What's that Indigo Girls line?
Oh, you love the Indigo Girls.
Darkness has a hunger that's insatiable. It's a great line, isn't it? You know,
darkness has a hunger that's insatiable. Oh, yeah, I know the
closer
line,
to
yeah.
fine. I oh. went to the doctor, you know the one, yeah. I went to the
man. I always remember you told a story about Damo Lindsay.
Yeah, Damo was supporting them. Was
yeah,
the,
and he said,
bizarre.
The ladies.
Two ladies. Quick story about Damo. I remember, that was a great podcast, by the way, with Damo last day. I loved it. Glenn Hansard again says to me, this must have been mid, late 80s, Jimmy. He said the same with David Gray. Listen to that tape. I'm half a meeting this fella. Listen to him. It was Glenn that got the whole David Gray thing going.
That's right,
in Dublin.
Yeah.
But he says, you come down to the International Bar, there's a fella playing, you're going to fucking love him, right? Went down, Damo's his name, he's from up where you were from, got back, don't meet up that way. So went down into the internet, literally there's about 10 or 15 people in the room. Dave Murphy used to do the introduction.
Dave, right? Yeah.
Damon Dempsey comes on and he sang, life's a roller coaster, baby, we're going side by side. And I'm there kind of going, he's singing in his own accent, but he kind of sounds Jamaican. On this roller coaster, I'm talking about your life here. And he's singing and there's a couple of people talking. And I'm kind of going, fucking listen to the guy, you know. And he sings a couple of songs. So I walk up to him afterwards, right? That's the first time I ever met him. I says, how are you, Damon? I'm Jimmy. He says, I thought that I was blown away. That was fucking brilliant. And his reaction was, really, what was I okay? Yeah. And that was not
humility.
The last
one, no. Humility.
100%. And that's still there, I can
hear. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, that was just the Damo story. Playing with the Indigo Girls is very funny, though.
Your one for me is that you're wise enough to be honest. That's what I get from you. Trying to have from day one.
I'm cool with the white lie. You know, we were talking about that. So little white lies are okay occasionally when it's not harmful. You know, it's you save someone's feelings in the moment. But
yeah, but the reason I go back to you is because of the honesty. I looked at you going, he's at the cotton on to something there. He's at the sussing something out. There's some wisdom in Jimmy, and I think it's your honesty.
Yeah, I used to wonder why you were so happy, you know. I remember an outlet saying today, you know, something fucking wrong with you. I said, what do you mean? You're too fucking happy. But we used to laugh about that. But I used to see a lightness in you, you know, and I was like, I want that. And that's recovery, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, that's the recovery, you know.
You see something you want. And
yeah, and it was in the meeting today, and there was a guy like saying, he was asking loads of questions, you know, and he was like, how the fuck do I get happy like you? You know, yeah. And it was deadly. I'm glad to hear you saying that I have a hunger that's amazing, because that's the ambition, is to have a hunger.
Yeah.
And love, hunger and love.
I'm starving.
Yeah, I'm starving. I'm starving for it. Yeah,
I'm yearning for connection and love. Yeah. You know, love it. Can't get enough of it. You know, and you know that paradox again. Like I'm here, and there's a lightness and a laughter, but my heart's breaking about something, a situation. It's just life. Just have to be. But not that I wouldn't want to share with you guys. It's just that I don't want to involve other people.
Of course,
in
that thing.
That's the thing I feel in the room is the connection. That connectedness. I feel that, and I'm avoiding that.
I feel a dance.
I'm avoiding
up.
You into it.
Damo had a sound that time. Do you feel all right tonight?
Yeah.
Do you feel all right? And when you wrote You're Not On Your Own Tonight, like I remember listening to Not On Your Own Tonight in Mother Red Caps. That's what I was saying, unfortunately, I think. Mm. And I thought, is this a Morrissey song? Because it was so deep, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that, I think we were blessed, the three of us, with our musical connections. Like you've very, very deep musical connection with Van Morrison and Pink Floyd and all those kind of things. Mm. I was the punk thing and the, you know, all that kind of stuff, and the David Gray and all that, really, you know, Glenn Hansard and all. You had a real connection with hip hop and it was deadly, like, but you also had the rave. You introduced me to the rave stuff and I was able to lean into the rave without having a, like, with the Van Morrison, you're listening for something, you know, you're getting something. With the rave music, you just have to lean into it.
Yeah, both of them for me is like a community of love. Mm-hmm. The early hip hop stuff and the rave stuff is definitely 1,000 people all facing the DJ.
I love Public Enemy. You know, you talked about them recently. Yeah. Love them. I think they're one of the most influential bands ever.
Yeah. And they were just going, love, but they were shouting it.
Yeah, motherfucker.
Give us the fucking love.
The Detroit techno stuff, it was all a big accident. You know, I love that. The gorgeous mistake, the perfect storm, you know, and I love it. I love when that happens. Like, you know, they were just, no, they had a keyboard with a sequencer on, right? But that was the only part of that keyboard that worked. Mm-hmm. So then they connected something else to it through a MIDI loop, you know, yoke or something into a different yoke. And then they were like,
lots of yokes, yeah.
There was a few yokes. Ian Prouts from Liverpool What's a fucking yoke?
What's a yoke?
And we'd be saying, a yoke can be loads of things. A yoke can be a thing. It can be an ecstasy tablet.
Uh-huh.
It can be the middle of an egg.
Yellow of an egg.
It can be a put down to a man or a woman.
Look at that yoke.
Fucking yoke. You're a yoke.
Fucking yoke.
And then it can be a good thing as well, you know. She's a good joke.
She's not a bad joke.
It's all about tone, isn't it? Intonation. It's all about the energy behind something. I've heard someone say, use the word, I love the word cunt, and I've heard someone, not everyone does, I'm aware of that. I've heard someone refer to their child in the most beautiful, loving way. Look at that cunt, Jimmy.
Look at that.
Look at that.
Yeah, man, the Mayo comedian, the long-haired guy that's on TikTok, you know, he says that, he talks about in Ireland, that cunt is not a bad word, you know.
I know women that want to reclaim it as a good word rather than getting all offended by it.
Absolutely.
They're just cunts.
They're just a show.
What a cunt.
What a cunt.
What a shower of cunts. That's like a Billy Connolly joke. It's a shower of cunts.
All coming out. What that look like?
Jimmy, thanks.
You're welcome. So thank that you.
I was looking forward to this one.
Me too. It's like I'm back home.
Yeah. Welcome home, Jimmy.
Talk to you later, boys. You up the flats. They aren't there anymore. Go on.
I'm just plain terror. Yo, fuck off, will you? Fresh, yeah?